Hey, Chris, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Welcome to. Okay, you go.
No, you go.
Welcome to Decoded. That's all I was going to say.
November 11th, 2018, Remembrance Day. I want to say Happy Remembrance Day, but I don't mean it like that. I just mean it's great that we could talk on this day, and I want to send to our three or four listeners who might be paying attention. I want to send a big shout out to anybody and everybody who's ever served or is serving. Thank you for letting me have my freedom in this fine country of Canada. I am totally appreciative of the people who have put their life in harm's way or in the service of the country so that I could be free and my parents could come here and start a really awesome life. So thank you.
Yes, I echo that too. Big thanks to anyone who has been and currently is involved in it's almost, I don't know if we often, I haven't actually heard the phrasing, sort of defending our freedoms. I believe that's what it is at the heart. It's interesting. I don't know if we talk about it as much in that frame anymore. It's more thankful for thank it's sort of like that clean cut thanks for what we've got and appreciation for the work that got there. But I don't often get the feels in the conversations that we're still looking at it like freedom's in jeopardy. It's in the language where it's almost, and I don't think we're past this idea that everyone's got democracy in the flavor that they love. But I was just reflecting on how the language may have changed that at one point in time, it would have been going somewhere or participating in order to defend democracy and defend our freedoms. And I just kind of noticed the other day, I don't hear that language much anymore. That was kind of extended by my son. He was asking about, because I'm sure like your school and my school and my son's school, they had the Remembrance Day assemblies or whatever the event that was used to commemorate whatever the shape of, all the different shapes of a Remembrance Day ceremony that you could have at a school. And when I picked up the kids on Friday, he asked me, he asked me, would I enlist? He said, would you go to war? And it's funny, like I don't know. I had to speak about it from the point of view of, I think I would have had the bravery to enlist if I had never met him. So I spoke very, like if I had never, because all of a sudden you're getting into the, we haven't quite had that conversation yet about how he has come to be. That's sort of like, he's not, my daughter understands that she was born and understands that she was, comes from Karen and I. My son's not quite there. So framing is like, yeah, if I hadn't met you, or if I hadn't met Maddie yet, and maybe if I hadn't met Mummy, I'd be more open to going and participating. And now that I know you, and now that we live together and we have a family and we have connections, I said, I don't know if I'd be brave enough to go and do something like that. And I realized in this conversation, those, it's always when we always have these great conversations driving home from school. I was pretty thankful that he didn't push it any harder, which he normally does. He kind of got distracted and went to something else because I realized I didn't have a lot of answers as to how I would participate if, well, you go back in the day, if conscripted, I mean, there wasn't a lot of choice, but if there was voluntary enlistment, how I would deal with that. That was the Remembrance Day drive home.
Interesting because my kids both have a reverence for Remembrance Day, and I'm not sure where it came from. And I even hate saying that because I have one. I'm very Remembrance Day is a big day for me. I think it's because my parents came from war and they chose Canada. Now I know that my mom, her brother was here and he was a little bit of established. I get that. But still, I mean, they chose Canada and they came here. And I've always grown up like understanding my parents left their country to go to another country to find peace and prosperity. And that makes me appreciative of where I live. And it also makes me, I'm a rule follower, I think, by nature. So there's something about the military that I enjoy. I think it's probably camaraderie. It's probably the knowing what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, how you're going to do it. There's some comfort there for me in that aspect of it. But I'm starting to come out of that. Like, I'm entering into more creative areas these days in my life. Anyway, long story short, both of my boys have a reverence for it, and I'm very appreciative of that. And I do what I can to share with them as often as I can that your grandparents picked this country. And so let's enjoy what this country has to offer. And let's also give back to this country in any way, shape, or form that we can to show our appreciation and to be good citizens. And so like they both, you know, went out of their way to gather as many poppies as they could to wear on Friday. They both wore their Kitchener Rangers Remembrance Day jersey. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they did that on their own. I didn't tell them, hey, you should really wear a poppy today. In fact, I'm a little embarrassed that I wasn't showing the same like level of reverence that they were, but I'm very proud. Very proud that they would enter into that. They've not asked me about service or, you know, whether I would have gone. But listening to you talk, I think that if my buddies were all going and I wasn't married and I didn't have kids, I probably would have gone. Because what else would I be doing here? Like, what would I have been doing here? Right? A healthy young man doing what while all his friends are at war? I would have gone, I'm sure. I'm sure of it. I don't think my parents would have stopped me. Looking back on my parents, I think they let me do a lot of what I wanted to do in a weird way, because there's a lot that they didn't let me do that I use against them. But I think if I would have said, I'm signing up and I'm out of here, everybody else is going, I think they may have been bothered, but I would have gone. I don't think they would have really gotten in my way. So,
it's interesting. I don't know how my parents would have. My parents came. My dad is local. I think second or third gen Irish. My mom was, I guess, first generation Canadian, and was born in a decommissioned concentration camp. So they spent time living in those spaces that just previously were used for, you know, annihilation. And the family came to Canada in stages, my grandfather coming here first and then bringing over my grandmother and his three children. So I haven't had a conversation with my mom about that impact. She has stories, and my grandmother actually told stories as well about what it was like to live in the concentration camp. There's a distance, though. It's a funny thing that happens with some of the remembering that I think happens on Remembrance Day, is that, well, maybe it comes down to what I said in the beginning, that idea that the language now isn't around defending freedom, like it's something that is on the cusp of just falling apart or being taken away. I think there's something to the distance that we in North America tend to have from conflict. We can go to conflict and then come back to safety. And I think that when my grandmother and even my mom, who has memories, when they speak about it, they are fully appreciative of that. They're speaking about these memories from a safe place now. And it would have been entirely different, I'm sure, had those memories been shared closer to the time of transition to Canada. They would have been far fresher, far palpable, you know, like, because the turnaround time could have felt quite drastic. And I think sometimes when you gear shift that fast, you're not even in a new space yet. So being brought to Canada out of a space like that, there's a conversation that, you know, I really should have with my grandmother around what was that like for you to come here and, you know, playing with the cost and value of freedom, like learning a new language, learning new cultural, other cultural mores, just the trauma, sort of dealing with the trauma after the fact, and also the whole frame of raising a family. Because now the family was all in one place too, mother, father, three children. So yeah, I don't know how it would have been received. You had said that you're a rule follower. I am sometimes. It's funny, I think that when I look at the rigor of being in the military, I would do well with that. The intensity of the duties would counteract my distractibility, because it's very, my measure of it is specific and directive. You do this thing, you move on. You do this thing, you move on. It's probably where it's funny at that same point, I was like, yeah, but how would I deal with being told what to do? It's like having the mandatory list of things that have to be done. I get, and I like that someone else might be setting those priorities for me. I get. But then the being told what to do next is where I think my personality, it would create the friction with my personality. So I don't know. I asked my son, I said, are you interested in soldiering? Is this something that, you know, you'd want to be a part of? And it's always, the answer that he gave is that he doesn't want to die. He doesn't want to die. He said, as long as I don't have to die. And, you know, we didn't go too deep on it, but I thought to myself, you know, where I wondered is that two things happened with that. I wondered about that. I wondered about the reality, how closely death now is a part of being in the armed forces. Again, didn't land anywhere, but I just started to think about that. And I had there was a 1-2 punch effect on that, because yesterday morning we went to, where Jake does basketball, in the gym, it looked like it was sort of like a whole school project, but where families had sort of like in different shapes and sizes, but basically they're like little profile cards for people in their family that have been involved in the military. And I found myself looking for living memories. So there were a lot of, you know, Second World War, First World War, great-great-grandmother, great-great-grandfather. But I was looking and I found ones where currently serving in the armed forces. And I thought that was a good balance. I like that balance. Because in answer to my son's question, I also like to believe that being in the armed forces can be a career that doesn't, though it's part of the mandate, but doesn't necessarily end in not coming back to your family. I don't know. Some Remembrance Day reflections.
Interesting, and I appreciate them. So thanks for sharing them.
You're welcome.
If it's okay with you, I'd love to shift gears just a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's squeeze in some content from work this week.
Okay.
I spent some time reflecting on supervision.
Yeah.
Because I have a new one. So I was doing lunch supervision 4 days a week for 20 minutes each day. And my job was to go between three classrooms and make sure students were eating, behaving themselves. I was responsible for them during that time. Last week, my vice principal came up to me and told me that they were getting another lunch hour supervisor, and that they were going to put the lunch hour supervisor in my place. So she would come in and she would do 5 days a week, 20 minutes with the three classes. And I would get moved outside to the parking lot for the 15 minutes before school starts. So every day I go outside now for 15 minutes, and I'm responsible for keeping cars out of the parking lot between 9 and 9:15 so that the buses can come in and that it's a safe zone for students. How do I express how excited and happy I was when I was told that I was going to be doing that supervision? It's so cool. There's such a big difference for me between watching kids eat lunch and trying to establish some type of control over, you know, 63 kids, 64 kids. The flip side is that now I'm outside in the morning and I'm all bundled up because it's cold these days. And I've got this big sign behind me that says student safety zone, can't come in. And people are walking their kids to school and they're saying hello and they're waving. Everybody's happy. I'm getting some fresh air right before I start my day. I have to tell you, it's great. So there's some supervision that is just fun and amazing. And then there's other supervision that's just, well, it's part of your job and you have to do it, whether you like it or not. And now that I don't have to do the lunchtime anymore, I'm really happy that I'm not doing the lunchtime anymore. You know, it's right at lunch, so it gets in the way of your flow in terms of, you know, when the kids would go outside, I'd grab something to eat quickly and then I'd get to work because I have things to do. Anyway, I thought I'd throw that out. I was so excited that I spent some time reflecting on it this week. And I thought I'd just throw it at you. I don't know what your supervision schedule is like. I can't wait to hear it. I tend to believe and I tend to hear that things are different in high school. You guys and girls don't get hit as hard with the supervision, the same as elementary. This is the stereotype. So I'm going to let you talk and see what you have to say about it.
It's a contentious issue always. You drop down the idea of having duties versus on calls in any teacher conversation, and you're going to get people that are kind of circumspect about it. And it's like, yeah, it's all part of the job. And then you have others that are like, they get ground right down to it. The basic way that I've seen the way the duties and the on calls work. So duties would be something that you would potentially be assigned for an extended period of time. On calls are where you're on the fly being asked to cover something. So it's like you're jumping in to help. Often we'll get an email, and each school manages it slightly differently. For some schools, I've been a part of a school where your duties, you'll know all your duties for the whole month. So, you know, in 4 weeks of 4 weeks of classes, that in week three, you've got hall duty. So you're walking the halls with the walkie-talkie, clearing the halls or getting kids to stand for the announcements or escorting kids back to class. And then within that, you could come in a morning and you have your prep period. So you know the period where, so the high school frame, again, for the most part, is there's three teachable classes that you're doing. So you have three periods, different periods where you're in class with students. And then one of the periods of the day would be your lunch. And then one of your periods is your prep period. And in that prep period, you could be assigned an on-call. So the way that that would play out is, it, for us at the school I'm at, is that we use a marks tracking information system called Teach Assist. And in that, when you open up Teach Assist, so you log into the website as everyone does, we do our attendance in it. So it's digital attendance. And also when you log into it for the first time, like when you, once the duty's been assigned, you can't get past a banner that pops up on your screen saying that you have an on-call that day. And because it's digital, you would click on the dialog box and then it will say, okay, you're going to room whatever for teacher, whatever. The lesson would be right there for you, or you'd be directed to where the lesson would be, teacher's desk or in a mailbox. And you would be doing 37 minutes of an on-call. So that's the other thing at high school, is that they're in 37 minute increments. It's probably a decimal something there, but half a period. So you can only be assigned half a period either of duty per day or on-call per day. So it's not as if you would be spending your whole prep period necessarily, or your whole lunch, because if you're assigned calf duty, you're using part of your lunch period. Yeah, so it's half of that that you'd be participating in that duty. Where it gets, and you probably have appreciation of this, where it gets, I guess it can get annoying, is where you've set up some sort of a meeting on your prep, or you're aiming to do a planning session or a creation session, or you want your meeting with students, and the way that it's scheduled, because you would know if you had a duty because it's scheduled ahead of time, but you wouldn't know if you had an on-call, and then you get an on-call. And all of those are tracked, the numbers. Each teacher, depending on their designation, has a different number, total number that they would achieve. So for instance, if you're, I'll just say, regular teacher teaching three periods a day, you're not a department head, you have no other designations on you, you would have X number of duties that you would have to satisfy in the year. Sorry, don't have to, but that's your max. Then let's say you were a department head. If you're a department head, so at high school, that's the individual that, let's say, leads the English department. And you would have an subject head, technically, not department head. So you'd have subject head and assistant subject head. Your number would be less, because there would be some understanding that your duties as a subject head are in addition to your teaching duties. So you would do less. Go one step deeper. If you're someone that's in a co-op department, where potentially you're in and out of the school and you need deeper consideration as to how you can both fulfill your duties and on-calls and still be out of the school to go visit kids that are potentially at the work site. These are all kind of different modifiers that can be on your thing. And generally speaking, the union is a part of this conversation, because it was my duties when I was branch president to get a report at the end of the month where I would get to see all the assigned duties, and I would see it. I would see the teacher's assigned duties by period, and I would go back to the administrator that was responsible for these things to say, hey, like, look, Roland's getting really hit really hard in period one prep. Can we back off that a little bit? And, you know, the counter could be, well, he's not at his max yet. I'm like, yeah, but you know what? Like, that advocacy piece, that I know that he's moving into this unit in English or whatever, and he kind of needs his prep period to set up his classroom, or he's having meetings with the students. So I would be going through and just looking to see that people are, as best as possible, getting hit equally. And it can happen where some people don't, because they're involved in field trips, so they're not there on their scheduled day. Sometimes absences and sicknesses can do it. Sometimes it's just the luck of the draw, the way it kind of, other people are already assigned, so you get assigned with another one. And the optics from inside out is that you always take it personally, because it's using your professional time either way. So it's, you start with that assumption that, and I found in the conversations, I guess as the branch president, that if someone was bothered, that it was genuine because they're not getting to their work. They can't get to the work because they're happening too frequently or inconsistently, whatever. But there were times sometimes where people were getting, you know, I was like, yeah, like they really are getting too many. I need to sort of look into this to find out why. And that's the thing. Do you want to know what different duties we have?
Sure.
So cafeteria. So it's, you know, monitoring the cafeteria. We have halls. So you'd be basically walking the halls. Sometimes you're walking the halls, but you're also planted in a certain spot because it may be a known hot spot for individuals. We have bus duty. That's another one. So you'd be there in the morning and you'd be there after school to help coordinate it. Halls, bus, calf. I think those are the primary ones that we would be doing. And so then you'd have an on-call, which could be, you'd be called into any number of classes.
What would you say, in your opinion, is it the most desirable of those duties and the least desirable of those duties?
I really do like Call of Duty. I get my steps in. I like hustling around the halls. I get to sort of see parts of the school that I don't always get to because of the groove you get in, having to go from. So for me, my teaching context is I'm at kind of like the front. If we put the school on a clock dial, I'm for two periods at 11 o'clock. And then for one period, my last period of the day, I have to hustle to 5 o'clock, one floor up. So the opposite side of the dial and one floor up. So it's pretty much, I'm beelining there. Like I'm hustling to make it there coming out of my period three, basically my period three to make it to my period four. I'm hustling. When I get the opportunity to kind of move around the school and see new things, and it's a big school, I like to do that. Least desirable. Oh, there's another duty I really like, but it's really hyper specific. And it's happened to me three times in my career. Having bus duty in the last week of school and then getting hit with bus duty and in the first week of school. And there's something really trippy about being there sort of in the last couple of days and seeing the students leave. And then 2 months pass and you're back there again, seeing what they look like and how different things are. And maybe you look a little bit different. Like it's a weird bit of time travel, but I realized I really, really like that. The sort of the waving the goodbye and like, hey, welcome back. I kind of dig that one. Least desirable. I think where one of the ones, it's kind of more of a general thing. It's the, there's courses that I have absolutely no familiarity in and there's fun. So, you know, and I feel like I can't help the students. Like, you know, you go in, you still go in as a teacher. And even though the instructor whose class you're covering, to do an on-call in a classroom, I feel compelled, like I want to try and engage with the students with the content that's been left behind. I want to be able to answer a question. I want to be able to assist them in their decoding and pulling apart the task that's at hand. But there's courses that I've had on calls in where I'm looking at the kids. I'm like, you are smarter than me in this content area. I can give you some strategies. I can give you definitely strategies for getting to the point, but they're looking for an explanation. And I think to myself, I can't do it. I get really uncomfortable in that spot. I just say, Google it. I don't have any way to help. So it's those classes where, and I've taught a lot of different courses, but there's still a lot of courses in you. I realize it in this space that I sit there. I'm like, I have no idea. I don't like saying that. I have no idea how to do this. And I go sort of big on, I'm like, can you walk me through what you know? But even that at some point, I'm like, I wish I knew something about this content area. You get so swept up in sort of believing you know everything when you're a teacher. Drop yourself down into a grade 12 U physics class and you realize like, I'm like, this is cool. That's why I end up looking at what the kids, I'm like, this is so cool. They're like, sir, that doesn't help me. And I'm like, it's cool. I don't have an answer.
I remember that in the brief time that I supply taught in the high school is you'd walk in and they'd be like, okay, you've got OAC physics. Mm-hmm. You've got grade 9 applied math. And then you have whatever. And I was like, whoa. And you go to these three different environments with totally different curriculums. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I remember the OAC classes, people would say to me, how do you do this? And I'd say, well, I remember how the teacher did it to me. I don't know if it's right or wrong, because it was the same teacher who had taught me, and it was like, it was interesting.
Oh, very, in the class that you were covering?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I was lucky in that when I finished teacher's college, I went back home to Ottawa, and I was doing my master's of education at the University of Ottawa. But because I was a qualified teacher, I could supply teach. So I was supply teaching with the Ottawa Catholic School Board, which was the school board I went to school in with, whatever. And the only school I ended up working at was my old high school because it was close and they knew me, so they would call me. And So I would get calls a lot from the teachers that taught me. I'd be in the school and they'd pull me aside and they'd be like, what are you doing next Wednesday? I'm like, nothing. And he's like, okay, you're coming in for me. Okay. And so I was with students in the same rooms where I was taught OAC physics, OAC chemistry, grade 11 biology. And it was funny because my brother was in the building at the time. He was in grade, my brother was in grade 10 or 11. So I would, like, I'd drive my brother to school, I'd do my job, and then I'd drive my brother home. Did I ever tell you the story about losing a class and worrying that I was going to get fired as a teacher, right, before I even really started being a teacher?
Oh, do share.
That's okay, awesome. I'm dropping it, and then if it's okay with you, we're going to have to shut down after this one. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I'm you know, not even a year out of teacher's college. And I'm doing my master's, and my classes were at night. So in the daytime, I could work. I was supply teaching, and I was, like I told you, I was getting called to my old high school. And I was basically in for teachers that had taught me that I knew. But the one day, it was one of those on-call business things. And I don't know what I was doing. I was walking past the office, and the secretary basically hollers my name and says, get in here. I come in, and she says to me, we need you to go to the gym now. The gym teacher's not here. There's nobody in for him. You're going to go do, I think it was like grade 11 phys ed. I said, okay. So I went to the gym. I opened the gym doors. There's all these kids there. And I'm like, okay, go change. They go to change. I go to the office, the gym office, to get the supply plans. And the door is locked. I can't get in. So I send a kid to the office telling them, go to the office and let them know that I can't get in the room. The key they gave me doesn't open the door. They go, they come back, and they say to me, they won't give us a key. The short answer is they don't trust us. They won't give us a key. You need to go get it. So, okay. The kids change. They're in the gym. And I say to them, you have to wait here. I have to go get the key so I can grab the plans. I'm not sure what we're doing. And it looked like the vice principal, who I didn't know. So there was an administrator I didn't know. She was giving me the stink eye, like, get out of here. I'm setting up for some kind of assembly. You're not supposed to be in the gym. And I'm politely trying to say, I don't have the plans. I don't know where I'm going or what I'm doing. I can't get in the room. She won't let me in the room. So I go to the office. 3-4 minutes later, they give me a key. I come back. Everybody's gone. All the kids are gone. And I'm thinking, this is it. There's a class loose in the school. I don't have them. So they're not being supervised. Nobody's instructing them. I might as well just leave my College of Teachers certificate in the office on the way out the door.
Yeah.
But then I remember my brother's in shop class. And if you've ever seen a shop class, it's pretty loose in there. The shop teacher is usually a pretty cool dude or dudette. They come from a different place. So
willing to help. Definitely willing to help.
So I basically go to shop. I see my brother and I'm like, dude, I just lost my grade 11 phys ed class. You need to find them now. Like, I don't know where they are. And this is serious. Like, I need to find them. My brother's like,
this is pre-cell phone too, right?
Oh yeah. Pre-cell phone.
You gotta set that context, because this is the social order is a little bit different.
Yeah, like you actually have to go and talk to people face to face. You can't message them on a platform, say, meet me here. It's not happening. My brother says to his teacher, I gotta go help my brother. Can I take a couple of kids? Teacher's like, yeah, whatever, go do what you need to do. Half an hour later, they're back at the gym. And I'm saying to them, where'd you go? Why'd you leave? Well, sir, you were gone for like 3 minutes. It's the 3-minute rule. You didn't come back. We figured that's it. We could just go. I said, no, you can't go. I then they say to me, so what are we doing? I said, we're supposed to be playing outside soccer, baseball. So let's go. They're like, we only have this many minutes left. I said, let's go. I can't go to the gym with you. We can't stand in the hallway. So we go outside. We play soccer, baseball for literally like 8 minutes or something ridiculous. We come back in. My brother decides he's not going back to class. So he's hanging out with me outside. And I kept saying to him, you need to go back. You helped me. I appreciate that. He's like, nah, we're not doing anything in shop today anyway. And I'm thinking, what have I gotten myself into? Needless to say, I did not lose my job. And I have to say that this story has lost its luster over the last 18 years. Because when I used to tell it, you know, 15, 16 years ago, it was a better story. It's not as good as it used to be.
I think part of it is there's we're both seasoned, wizened. And there's a part of you drop that story in a group, let's say, of first and second year teachers, and you're hitting some tripwires there for them. We're like, oh my, like that exact same. I have memories of those feelings, but I can't touch the feelings. That sort of nervousness around, you know, the worst case and the list of worst case scenarios when you're in your first and second year is pretty short and pretty intense. You get into your first decade and you start to realize there's a whole lot of things on that list and I really can't sort of focus on it on the day to day. So it's just, I think there's a perspective thing.
How would you like to shut this down today, Chris?
Just with an air high five.
That's it.
There we go.
Right on.
Yeah, I'm all good, man. I'm all good.
Thanks for being accommodating with the schedule.
Not a problem, man.
And I still don't have episode 8 of season 2 up. I've been neglectful this week. This week I had 2 nights of parent-teacher interviews and trying to get my son to his hockey on one of those nights. It was a force to be reckoned with, I'll tell you that.
No, I hear you. I'll tell you, the only thing in advance I'll tell you is this week I'm going to Quest. And I've dropped that before, so it's our board's big student achievement conference. So you may get some, you'll get some flow from that this week. I'm not sure how I'll do it. Maybe I'll finally get myself back into making some videos.
I was just about to say it would be awesome if you could capture some of that and some of your thinking with a video. I love it. I think that'd be awesome to see you doing your thing and sticking it on the Decoded podcast in the binary code section, because I was checking them out this week. I was watwatching some of them and I was enjoying them. I was enjoying your flow in your classroom and talking about how hours were just passing by. Just thinking how cool it is to be able to capture those moments of stress or dismay or excitement. Anyway, okay, well, have a good week, and I'm looking forward to hearing about your Quest experience.
For sure. Take care of yourself.
You too. See ya.